your Christmas album, The Birth of a King, is always like in our top 10 during Christmas time. It's really popular. And so, and I know you do like a holiday show every year. Tell us about that and tell us about just like your Christmas music in general.
I mean, it was kind of a wild experience. I wanted to make, the short story is I wanted to make a Christmas album for like 15 years and I just never had time to get to it. And in 2020, when everyone took a sec to quarantine and figure out what was going on, everyone stopped coming over. So I'm like, I'm going to make that Christmas album and turn into a 6-month labor of love. And it was one of the most inspiring things I'd ever worked on. Just my goal was to make like a cinematic, like movie feel to, you know, for Christmas, the story. Some of the songs are, sometimes they're kind of lullaby or Sunday school sounding, you know, like Away in a Manger and Silent Night. So I wanted to try to apply a Lord of the Rings type feel to those songs. And every song, you know, has a different vocalist on it and just reimagining some of the songs, taking the lyrics and making brand new songs out of them. But I just never knew I would do it live. That was kind of like when I was making it, I was like, man, this would be such a cool Christmas show. But that'd be impossible. You know, that's what I said. And, you know, a year and a half later, we were like, let's just try to line it up and see what roadblocks we hit. So we just kind of started planning and we never hit any roadblocks. So we're like, okay, I guess we should do it, you know? And we were worried like who will come to the show, who, you know, how, and it's somehow people just found that album, found the show and people are like traveling. It's become like a destination event in a lot of ways, you know? So.
Yeah. Almost like a tradition. Because, yeah, it's risky because, you know, Christmas time is already so busy that it's like, oh, man, will people come to another Christmas show? But I feel like once you kind of get something like that going, it becomes a tradition for people.
Yeah, we didn't foresee this happening. I mean, 3 years ago, we did our first show, you know, and it's just grown over the years.
Where's the show this year?
This year is our first year at Bridgestone Arena.
Wow.
Which is so wild for me to say that. Because I'm not a touring artist. I'm not like a live show guy. I mean, I used to do live shows back in the day, but not on that level. So the first year, you know, we were at Belmont at Fisher Center. And then we went to the Grand Ole Opry. Now we're at Bridgestone. So we'll see. I'm not in the driver's seat. And I kind of love that because there's not a lot of pressure when you're not in the driver's seat. And I feel like, you know, God's doing a thing and I'm just asking him where he wants to take and what he wants to do and giving him room to do his thing, you know?
And you've got a new Christmas album coming, right?
I don't have a new Christmas album coming. I'm adding a couple songs, which is not something I thought I would ever do. But I was really inspired last year. And I dabbled with a couple songs and I found a couple things. So yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Do you like Christmas music? Because you didn't start in Christmas music, right?
No, I guess I do. This is so weird. I've always loved Christmas music. And even when I was in school and college and at my church growing up, I was like the guy who always did the big Christmas chapel or the Christmas service, right? And I would like plan this big Christmas thing, you know, at my small school or my small church. So I kind of always did these big Christmas, you know, concerts in a way. So I guess I maybe should have seen this coming, you know,
yeah.
I've always had a love for that. I don't know where it came from. I just have always loved it.
That's awesome, man. So tell us about like your other music. So the non-Christmas music, and maybe even just share, like, how did you even get going in music? Like, what was your start?
Well, it's really interesting because I grew up making instrumental tracks, right? In a dark basement.
Yeah. What were you using then? Was that Reason? Propeller Head Reason or?
No. Well, I did use Reason in college. Way before that, there was a program called Music Time. No one's ever heard of it.
Oh, wow.
It was a Windows only thing.
Yeah.
but I did instrumental, you know, MIDI music. And then as I went to college and started leading worship at my church, like I started writing worship songs. And a lot of people don't even know this. Like I traveled and led worship with my band for like over 10 years. So that was like a big part of my thing. And then randomly, I started producing some other people, and that opened some doors to do like hip hop music, which I never saw coming. No one did. And doing music for movie trailers and TV shows and video games, and like they call it sync music, right? Cinematic music. And that was a love of mine as well. So I kind of have been pouring into that for the last 10 years or so. So most of my other music is cinematic music, just for TV shows and movies. But I got to put those two things together when I made this Christmas album, the cinematic music with my background in worship leading. And that's kind of what made The Birth of a King.
Where did you go to college?
I went to college at a small Christian college in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was called Grace Bible College. It is now called Grace Christian University, I think. But they, what's crazy is they had a really good studio producing like program, music degree. But there were only, you know, five guys in the senior class with me. So, and I was the only one that wanted to use the studio. So I felt like I was in there all the time, and I had the whole studio to myself, you know, and it was such a cool part of my story to like have that experience, learning all that, and then launch on my own to start producing other people.
I feel like I have a vague memory of music time. Like very, very simple MIDI making. I feel like I have a very, very vague memory of it. I feel like someone should bring that back, man. Isn't it amazing how far it's come? Like what are you using now? Logic or Ableton? Or
I use Pro Tools actually to program.
Pro Tools, yeah. And isn't it crazy just how far it's all come? I mean,
you remember like general MIDI sounds? There was 128 yes. voices, and you had like the helicopter and the birds tweeting, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And now I'm literally all morning I've been programming an actual orchestra that was sampled, but I get to play them on my keyboard, and it's just wild that we got to see all of that stuff change.
That's insane, man. Would you say like, do you still lead worship at all?
I don't.
Yeah. So you said you did that for 10 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. I'm not the best vocalist. Like that's not my strength. I could do it. I could do it enough to, you know, to lead. But now, you know, even the Christmas show at times, there's definitely worshipful moments. And I still feel like I'm leading worship. I'm just not singing the vocals, and I'm pairing with people who are incredible vocalists, and that is their strength. So when I can bring my strength and their strength together, you just have a much, you know, stronger product for that kind of stuff, you know.
You've spent a lot of time on stage, right? And I know in the studio, but you've spent a lot of time on the stage too. And one of the things I've been thinking about recently is the challenge that worship leaders face. You know, a lot of people listening to this are worship leaders, which means, and what I mean by that is they're probably on staff at a church every 7 days, Sunday rolls around. They're on stage in front of, you know, 300, 500 people. And, you know, there is a challenge there when someone's on stage and there's like lights on you and you've got a microphone and everybody's just kind of watching you in a way. Hopefully they're not just watching. Hopefully they're actually, you know, worshiping God with you. But many people are just watching. And so there's this kind of weird, like, you know, performance aspect still of leading worship or being on the stage. And I think I'm kind of, one thing I'd love to chat with you about, because I know that you've had a lot of experience in this, is just like how you have stayed spiritually grounded in the midst of, you know, I hear you say like, you know, you're about to play the Bridgestone Arena. Like, wow, like that's insane. And I feel like anybody who would have the opportunity to play like the Bridgestone Arena like that, I feel like that would be a challenge of like, how do you stay like grounded spiritually in what you're doing, you know, and not letting it be about the fame and the spotlight, you know? Mm. Does that make any sense? I'd be curious, like how would you like even define spiritually grounded? Like when I say spiritually grounded, what comes to your mind? And it could be anything. I'm just curious, like what you think of when I say that.
I think there have been so many stories in my personal life that I've seen God work in and do that were so clearly not me that there's no way I could think it was me that did them. And I think that was my foundation for everything. Even in our marriage, when me and my wife got married, when I say dirt poor, whatever you think, like an eighth of that, like barely, we couldn't go to Taco Bell once a month, even on a date. Like that's a story we have, like the Taco Bell. Nope. Can't do it this month. Can't afford it. And we did our laundry in the bathtub and then not even just in a financial way, but like the way that God showed up and did things, powerful things with people and in worship settings and every area of life. Like, you know, we both have just always given everything to him. And so I'm very passionate about this topic because I feel like, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I started leading worship maybe in my early teen years or whatever. And I was blindsided by adults that were on the worship team. Like I'm just playing, I have my head down, I'm just having so much fun. I love music. I love playing the piano. I love doing my best. And I'm blindsided by adults making comments that like I was trying to show off. And it like almost like it was so jarring because that was not even like remotely on my mind. And I was like, what? And then I saw, you know, peers, right? And you know, who knows where all those things are coming from, but I remember being spiritually attacked and like they're misunderstanding me. They don't know my heart. And so I started praying, to answer your question, I started praying a prayer that God would reveal my intentions when I'm on stage. And so if my intentions are to have everybody look at me, I pray that people would see right through it and it would be gross. And I prayed that, you know, which I prayed that he would keep my intentions about just serving him and worshiping him and that people would just see that so they're not distracted and they would just know my heart. And if people are distracted by thinking you're all about yourself, they're not going to be able to follow you and lead worship or worship with you, right? So that was tough for me as a kid to like wrestle that. And I just wanted people to not be distracted because I'm like, no, guys, I'm trying to do this completely other thing and everyone was missing it. And so for me, I think that's a powerful prayer for all worship leaders and worship team members. Like, reveal my intentions. And that's what great accountability, like to humble yourself and just be like, God, help me to always make this about you, soften my heart. And if it's ever not in the right place, expose that so I can get back on course.
Yeah, that's good. That's actually a great little tip there. Just asking that, even in the moment, because it can be such an easy thing to slip into of maybe the intentions or the motives change. And I think that like, if people are really honest with themselves, they like, maybe if you think about it, you like, oh man, I hate that I do that. And the answer to fixing that is not like stopping leading worship, like stopping entirely. But I think the answer is doing exactly what you just said, I think, which is, you know, you keep leading worship, but you start being more mindful of like, what are you actually thinking about while you're leading worship? What are your motives? What are your intentions? Because the sanctification of that is going to happen over actually practicing it and doing it, not just quitting and giving it up entirely.
Yeah, we have to constantly recalibrate as we go. No one is going to, from a young kid to their first time ever leading worship, just be doused with full maturity of never having any wrestling with thoughts or, you know what I mean? Like dealing with some of these things and these stories. And it does come with experience and just striving for that. But I do think that that's important to have when you're a worship leader, to have a heart for worship leading, to not be about performance and yourself.
I had not thought of this experience in a long time. When I first started leading worship, I was a young teenager, 13. And I remember for a couple years there when I was like just started leading worship, young teenager, there was a season when whenever during the worship set, I started having thoughts about like, oh, wow, we're sounding really great, or, you know, some sort of like self-motivated like thought, I remember immediately I would break a string on my guitar. And I knew like immediately when I broke the string on the guitar, it was almost like a slap in the face of like, hey, what are you thinking about? Like, what do you, and I remember at the beginning, like I was very frustrated by that because I was like, why am I always breaking strings on the guitar? Until I realized that it happened every time I was like thinking about myself. And I realized that it was actually God like reminding me and humbling me to like change my thinking and to refocus. And like, dude, I'm telling you, that happened like every time. That happened for a couple years. And I don't know. It was honestly like a loving way, I feel like, for God to remind me. You know, as annoying as it was like a really loving thing for God to do.
Yeah, and it could have been a lot worse. He could have reminded you much harsher ways. That's so true. I have my own versions of that, you know, seeing that. And it is true, man. It's like the whole like pride comes before the fall thing. Like that's actually a true thing. And like, God will not hesitate to just remind us like, hey, wait a second here. Like, you know, why are you grabbing the steering wheel away from me? Like when we do that, you know, it's like, it's almost like I imagine my kid sitting in the passenger seat next to me, who's 8. And I'm driving and all of a sudden he thinks he wants to drive and he grabs the wheel and I let go and let him. And he's like, I don't know how to drive. It's crazy, right? Until I take back over. And I feel like we think we can do some things. And as soon as we try to do them without God, everything falls apart.
Curious, like when you first started gaining, you know, more visibility, you know, when you started getting like platforms that were in front of more and more people, like how did that impact your personal walk with God?
I mean, honestly, man, it's just, and my faith is the most important thing in my life. You know, I never wavered from that for an opportunity. Because again, I genuinely see, like, I'm just super thankful. I'm thankful that, you know, I worked since I was 8 years old, striving to do music as a job someday. And it really wasn't full time until I was about 30. You know, and so I think I'm so grateful for the opportunity, and just the same way it was given, I know it could be taken away. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I had to navigate some interesting things. You know, when you do movies and TV shows and work with artists in the mainstream space in LA, like you're asked to do sessions that might not be something you'd want to, you know, be associated with or something. And so there's been a few times like that, you know, which I've had to navigate out of, but, yeah, I wouldn't sacrifice that, you know, my spiritual walk for an opportunity.
Yeah. You know? Are there any like spiritual practices that have helped you stay centered, you know, on what really matters, especially too, like when people, you know, I know people who work at a church too, experience all the time, just like loud opinions and, you know, there's drama that happens on a church staff team or a worship team. And that happens in any industry.
Oh, I've seen my share of that.
Yeah, you've seen it. Like, what spiritual practices maybe help you, like, okay, stay centered on this is what it's really about. I'm going to stay focused on this.
I'm being genuine. Something that's stuck with me since college, one of my professors, he told me that every morning after the shower or in the shower or whatever, he would get down on his knees and give the day to God and just give it over, like surrender and say, you know, change my desires to match what, like your desires for me. So then we're going after the same thing, like actually change the desires of my heart to want what you want for me today. And that was, you know, 20 years ago. And that's a practice that I've actually adopted into my life. In so many times in this studio, before we went on sale for that first Christmas show, and I was like, what are we doing here? Like, I got down on my knees and I just like pray. And I just, there's something about removing distraction and being in that posture that you're just like, all right, I'm here. What do you want? And listen. And I think your prayer life is the most crucial practice to stay grounded more than anything else, probably, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to guard that time to make sure that, you know, it just doesn't slip away in the midst of a busy day. And
yeah. And I also think, you know, our prayer life is supposed to be constant, right? All day, every day, just throughout the day. And I feel like that's kind of the mode of my brain at all times. I'm walking to my car, I'm grabbing something, walking up the stairs to my studio. Like, you can be praying, you know, and it doesn't always have to be a dedicated, all right, lock the doors, everyone. Like, I'm going to get on my knees and like, just, you know, sometimes you don't have that space or time to do that, you know? So just being in constant contact with God.
Yeah. Just awareness. Yeah. How do you handle the temptation to let the platform or success define your identity? That's a tough one. Like, you know, of feeling like you actually have something to offer, whether or not there is a stage or whether or not a song is a hit or a new release is a hit. Like, I feel like that's a temptation a lot of people would feel. Like, is there any tips you have there on?
Yeah, I think that's something we all have to constantly be mindful of. I mean, I'll tell you one thing, social media doesn't help with that. That's
no,
for sure.
It doesn't.
I think I've noticed that, you know, when I'm in the middle of projects where I'm posting a lot and, you know, I mostly just use it for my music and my, you know, brand, if you will. But when you're in it and you're just doing the social media thing, you get really like sucked in and zoom in on that. And it just feels like everything holds so much more weight. And then when I'm not in the middle of posting about a project and I go weeks without even thinking about it, like the freedom, like it's so like apparent how much more free you feel in your life. Like, that's not my identity. I don't even really care about that. The people that follow me or the number of views and comments and likes, whatever it is, like when you, I think we need to step out of that and remember what reality is. And that's a way to stay grounded, not even just spiritually, but in all ways, you know what I mean? And I'm not specifically demonizing social media per se, but like, anything can be unhealthy if you're just, you know, addicted to it. And that's an easy thing to fall into addiction with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know a lot of artists during COVID had a hard time because, like, you know, maybe they're used to touring on a stage, and then all of a sudden that was like taken away for, you know, a short season there. But at the time, we didn't know how long it'd be. And so it's interesting to think about, like, how does God like shape our character in both of those seasons, like the seasons when you're in a spotlight and the seasons when it's really quiet. How did that season look like for you during that year period?
Well, that was interesting enough. I can, first of all, I can relate to that feeling of like, you know, we do this thing, whether it's using our gifts of writing, producing, singing, music, right? Touring. That is a high for us. And when we're not doing it, it is tough to feel like value or maybe even like to enjoy long periods of time away from that. Does that make sense? And so in 2020, ironically, that was the year that I put my head down and I made that Christmas album. And I was on such a spiritual journey making that, I just felt like I was really inspired. But I know that was not the experience for a lot of people. And if I had not had that project, you know, that I was pouring into and feeling God work through that, like that, I can imagine why that would have been really tough for me too. I remember back when I used to tour, you know, we were playing every weekend and like all summer and doing all these tour dates and stuff. But every December was really slow for us, naturally, Christmas and all that. Now, ironically, December is the busiest month of my life. But December was super slow. And I always kind of like fell into a minor depression. And my wife always, you know, saw that. And she was like, you do this every year. January's going to kick off and you're going to be right back again. You know, she helped me see that. But it was because I wasn't doing that thing. And so that's something, I don't know, that's something to watch out for. I mean, all of us, you know, like, why do we find so much worth and joy in when we're doing that? And if we're not, do we struggle? And you know what I mean? That's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's why I was thinking how that kind of goes along with the identity piece of, okay, so when it is taken away, if you aren't touring, how do you deal with that that season? And I feel like it's always like that feeling kind of like, you know, like when you were a kid, you'd go away to like summer camp or youth camp and like you have a great experience and you're with like a ton of people for like 3 days, 7 days. But then you come home and it's like, there's almost like a depression in a way. Like all of a sudden you're alone. You're not around anybody. You're like back to normal life. Like this huge high is just like now come down to a low. And I feel like for a lot of artists, you could maybe even take that very personally and be like, oh man, what am I doing with my life? You know, who am I if I'm not doing that thing?
I think every artist struggles with that. That's probably the nature of our DNA to just be so passionate about what we create and pour into and stuff, whether it's in a worship setting or for movies and TV shows, right? It's like we experience a high level of life when we're doing what we were made to like do, and we're creating, we're creators, right? Artists. So I think everybody, yeah, we all struggle with that. And I mean, find me the artist that has just as much joy when they're just sitting at home on the porch all day when they were doing a concert the night before. I mean, that's just tough, you know?
Yeah, that is tough. If you're like one night in front of 15,000 people and then the next night you're like just sitting on the porch alone. I mean, that is a major shift. I'm curious, like, are there any tips that you've found that have helped you with that transition, or even other people that you know that you're like, okay, they handle that well. Like, what do they do? Like, how do people handle that transition? Or does it just kind of take time? I was hoping you could tell me. Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe it's one of those things that, I mean, I know that for me, I mean, and I'm not playing in front of 10,000 people, but I know for me when I have those transitions, honestly, it's just, you have to like go through it to get, you have to go in it to like get to the other side. And literally it just takes time. Because you usually start feeling better after maybe like a day or two.
Yeah, and I think that's it. That's probably the key, is knowing that this is normal. This is what people feel. And not even just artists and musicians, but like anyone who has a great experience. People who like go on the vacation of a lifetime and then they come home. Like, there's just going to be a readjustment to life. Because let's face it, being on stage in front of thousands of people isn't like... like normal. That's not like,
no, it's not
that's
normal.
Life. And everything not that is kind of just less than until we get back to normal life. That's not right. So I think we just have to know that. We have to know that, like, okay, I had this really high experience, and but this is my life, and I need to, like, you know, just get through this feeling and
acknowledging it, that like, okay, this is probably going to happen. Like, you know, when you're in your, you know, when you're in the cab on the way home from the airport, like just kind of already internalizing, like, okay, well, I'm about to like walk into a transition that's going to be very difficult and very different than what I was just experiencing for the past week.
Yeah. And I wonder if like that process is built, like baked into us. Like, did God give us a thing where we could like come down from experiences? Cause imagine if we couldn't transition. And I mean, some of us have a hard time transitioning, but time helps us do that still, right? And it's like, I just wonder, yeah, if there's something in us that helps us to like reconnect and like get our mind back into where like it's all foggy, right? And this just the smoke clears, and then we can like start to see, oh yeah, I gotta make my kids lunch today and like get back in it, you know?
Yeah. Has God built in time? Or has God built in something inside of us that helps us with transitions? And it made me think of David in the Bible, where David's like, you know, he has his moments too, where he's like out like winning these massive battles, you know, thousands of peoples. He's like being paraded down the street, you know, as like a warrior. And, you know, he's probably like in the spotlight in front of a huge crowd. But then there's also a time when he ends up writing, you know, the psalm that says, the Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside still waters. And but then it says, and he makes me lie down in green pastures. It's not like I choose to lie down in green pastures. Like God makes me lie down in green pastures. Mm. Almost like, hey, you're running so much that like right now I'm going to like make you lie down and rest. And you're laying now beside a peaceful stream. There's not thousands of people around you cheering your name. Like I am like making you lie down to rest. And I think there are those like moments where we need that. And so that is like when you come back from tour, that is the like cup of coffee on the porch when you're just alone. And maybe you don't want to be, maybe you want to be back in front of like those couple thousand people, but God is like making you for that moment, just lie down and rest. And I don't know. I just thought of like that psalm when you're sharing that.
That's really good, man. Cause that's rest is the discipline that a lot of creatives have a hard time with. And disciplines aren't always fun or enjoyable, but they're good for us. And when we're sitting on the front porch with the coffee and the breeze is on our face and it's slow, even if we're like, I have to get up and do that and I need to do that or whatever, like sitting there is good for us, even if we're not feeling the effects of it immediately. It is needed. Rest, Sabbath. Like it is a need.
Yeah, Sabbath. You
know? So,
and it's a commandment, which is crazy because like you kind of forget, like that's literally a commandment. And so if you're not keeping a Sabbath, if you're not keeping any sort of day of rest, like you're literally breaking the third commandment. And it's that important, I guess, is what I'm saying, is that like we kind of forget that rest is, we just run. But rest is so important, and God will make you lie down if you don't lie down on your own.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? Man, like, I mean, you know, I think about when I was leading worship, right? My guitar string was breaking. Like I wouldn't have like chosen to break my guitar string, but God like made it happen to like humble me, to lay me down and be like, hey, this is about me and not about you. But I know we're out of time, man. I'm really excited about the new tracks you're dropping. Your Christmas album is always way up on the top list at Loop Community. So we're going to be pushing that this Christmas time. And how can people come see your Christmas show?
I mean, it's a annual destination event in Nashville. We do it one night in Nashville every year. And it's just called The Birth of a King. So if you search The Birth of a King or Tommy Prophet, like it'll come up, you know. And our new model is going on sale the night of the show for the next year. So every December, you know, we go on sale for the next year.
What's your favorite song to play from that album, The Birth of a King?
That's like asking me my favorite kid, man. I don't know.
I know.
Every single song has its own special moment with that artist specifically. And like, I just, I don't have a favorite. I genuinely don't. I really just love, I'm so thankful that I get to do that concert. That is like it's become my favorite night of the year.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Well, it's a great project, and thanks for what you're doing, man. All right, great conversation with Tommy Prophet. Type down in the comments what's your favorite Christmas song to play at your church during December. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe buttons to stay tuned for future interviews.